This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
All things made by man fall victim to time and circumstance or something like that. Or the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, whichever comes first. The Angels snap Seattle's 8-game losing streak yesterday, but I came away from that game and I was there. That there is a momentum and an enthusiasm for this team in that crowd at the stadium that hasn't been here in 10 years or so. There is an excitement and an expectation that everybody should be pumped up about, because we've always wondered what would happen when it turns and when people get turned on. I believe people are into this season, this team, and their possibilities. Even with a loss yesterday, even with a lot of different things that happened that were disappointing, there was a lot of excitement.
Do you feel responsible for the loss yesterday, because you went and you taunted the bat flipper?
I tell you this, I did it. Yeah, I did.
And he got two hits and, what, a couple RBIs?
He had RBI singles in each of his first two at-bats.
I saw him bat flip on a single.
Yes, he did.
Does he bat flip all the time now? Does he bat flip when he walks or gets hit by a pitch?
The bat flip may not have been coincidental, Jim.
I saw the game the day before, and Blowers had whoever was in the van was rerunning they wanted somebody to comment about it, because he hit a single and he flipped the bat, and so Dave Sim says, hey, he's having some fun, and he flipped his bat there. And then Blowers, very sort of deadpan, just goes, yeah, after a single.
But I guess, don't you want to see more of that?
No,
I don't. I mean, the only reason I say that is because the NBA, it's always look at me, and they're celebrating all the time. The NFL adopting the celebration. The NFL has gone too far with that end zone stuff, if you ask me. Well, you didn't, but I told you what I felt anyway. But baseball, I mean, I kind of get a kick out of Valbuena doing the bat flipping. I was glad that he got thrown out at second in the last series when he was here.
When he flipped his bat on a ball that he hit to the wall, and Mitch Haniger ended up picking it up, and he came to bat yesterday. And
what did you say?
I very vocally reminded him of, hey, you going to flip your bat this time? Remember what happened last time? Remember, you mess with the bull, you get the horns.
Were you close enough where he could hear you?
Yeah, because I was in row 5 in the Diamond Club.
Oh, were you?
With my in-laws.
Are you ever in the cheap seats anymore?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago I went with Ross. We sat out in the center field.
Are you afraid that Danny, he's taking more than his fair share of Diamond Club seats?
No, not at all. Because my kids and wife were in front row, when was it, last Friday against the Royals.
Yeah.
It's one of the nice perks of the job here.
It's an unbelievable. Yeah. Fantastic. The spread yesterday was delicious.
It's better, though, when you're in your 20s, though, don't you think?
Yeah.
Because when you're in your 60s, your 50s, you don't take advantage of the drinking.
It's like, probably also
speak
better
for yourself.
Oh, do you?
Well, I did.
It's also better for people who drink when you go there and say, I'll have a soda water. Yeah, when you're in the Diamond Club, you get limitless soda water. All the soda water you can drink. Valbuena comes up the first time, and I talked to him about bat flipping, and I was very loud about it. I'm not quiet in those sort of situations.
Wait, you talked about it with him?
Did
he turn around and engage you?
No, he did not. But I was like, Luis, remember that? And he's standing right there warming up.
And for people that don't know, I've been in the Diamond Club with Danny, and it's loud. Okay? It's loud.
Danny's loud?
Yes. Evan Longoria, when Tampa Bay, for people who haven't heard this story, he had a machine gun and some weed.
That he got robbed when he was at spring training, and he talked about getting robbed, but he didn't tell the reporters that among the missing items was a significant amount of marijuana and an AK-47.
All right. And so Danny stands up and goes, you know, making the machine gun noise. What about the weed? Oh, yeah.
How old are you?
43.
And you're sober when you're doing this.
Yeah. At that point, I was still drinking, but I was not drunk when I did it with Dave.
You were not, no.
Yeah. But which was there, and this was the result after my first heckling of Luis Valbuena.
The 1-2 pitch, swing and a line drive the other way, fair ball down the left field line in toward the corner. Ohtani heading for third. He is going to be waved in. Up with the ball is Gamble. The throw in, going to be cut off by Segura. The relay to the plate, not in time. In at second goes Valbuena with a two-out RBI double, and the Angels have themselves a 1-0 lead here in the second.
Now the Mariners came back, and they took a 2-1 lead after back-to-back home runs by Seager and Ryan Healy, but then Valbuena turns up again a little bit later in the game, and I had once again talked about the bat flipping, and this was the result this time.
The 2-1 pitch, swinging a soft line drive into left field for a base hit. Here comes Pujols on to score from third. Down to second goes Ohtani. An RBI single by Valbuena, and the Angels have tied it. It's now the Mariners 2 and the Angels 2 here in the top half of the fourth.
And when he came up for the third time, I did something that I can't remember if I've ever done this before, but I apologize to Valbuena. I informed him that it was my fault for pointing out the bat flipping. I said that I was out of line. I shouldn't have mentioned that. And I asked him, please stop driving in runs. My fault. My bad. I don't care if you flip the bat. Because after the single, I'm not sure about the double. After the single, he definitely flipped the bat.
Do people look at you and think you're funny? Or do people look at you and say, God, why doesn't that guy shut up?
Define people.
Well, fans around you, other diamond clubbers who are within earshot.
Some people are amused. Some are not. I believe that the Mike Zunino is good. I shouted a couple times when he came on as a pinch hitter. Like, just shouted, Mike Zunino is good. My wife was not amused by that. She said it's not a thing. I informed her that, yes, in fact, it was a thing. The guy sitting right behind me, he laughed when I said it.
So I thought you would have said he's good at baseball.
No, just Mike Zunino is good.
You just screamed that up.
Yeah, Lookout Landing has been propagating that little refrain to be called out, and I kind of like it.
Well, I wasn't embarrassed for Danny, but I would never.
Well, you didn't
do
know
that.
What was going on. You already said you were drinking like a fish there in the Diamond Club.
Oh no, not that time.
Oh,
Jim, I can drink and know what's going on.
Yeah, that's a talent.
No, but I just look at Danny. And I'm like, guy's got guts, man. He doesn't care. He really doesn't care what people think.
Is it guts or just utter disregard for the polite ethics of normal society?
What was the other thing you did? Who Steven, somebody named Steven
Pierce.
Is it Pierce? No, it's a guy from up here.
Yeah, he's the kid from Everett, the outfielder there.
Yeah.
Sousa.
Steven Sousa. That's who
you.
It was.
There's a guy that just kept screaming out his name every time that he came up to bat. And so then Danny started being like a parrot. He just started screaming out, Steven! Steven! So, yeah, that happened the whole time. So there you were. Did anybody respond to you?
None of the players do. No, but nobody. You have to be pretty thin-skinned to actually respond. I do believe Valbuena's bat flip after the second RBI was aimed at my heckling, though. And that's why I had to back it off and just say, hey, my fault. I'm sorry. I take it back. Please stop punishing us.
Did you yell at Trout?
I did not. I kept yelling at service to walk Trout.
Yeah.
Two of the times they obliged. One of the times that I wanted him to walk him, they did not.
So what'd you say, C-Raj? 5 walks, 3 of them intentional?
Yeah, he's, one for his last 13.
Yeah, he's one for his last 13. And that's going back into the Baltimore series, the last game of the Baltimore series. So obviously it's worked, but what happened yesterday was they had guys step up that, you know, look, Calhoun is hitting 180. But he's .500 in his last 3 games. He's got a couple of home runs, 4 RBIs. And
don't you love that guy, Dave?
I love Cole Calhoun.
I do too. And I don't know why either. He just looks like a gritty type of grinder that's always going to beat you somehow.
He does. He's like 5'10", 205. He looks like a football player, kind of. And I just like his grittiness. And so Valbuena and Cole Calhoun both step up. You walk Trout and... You know, I don't know. Pujols was okay. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Pujols. Yeah. He got thrown out at second once, which was awesome to watch because he is slow.
He can't run.
He's the slowest player I've seen since Frankopotamus Thomas. Like, Frank was the last guy that was as slow as Pujols is in a game. Pujols can't run at all.
Yeah, he made a play at home on Zunino in the ninth, though, didn't he? When he was, they threw Zunino out at home.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? Because I was just driving along listening to it on the radio. Did it matter?
No, it did not matter. It didn't matter because at that point, I mean, Zunino could have scored on a fly ball previous to that. But at that point, you're down. You need 3 runs. Mike Zunino's run doesn't really matter. It's where he was.
So you don't care that you still had a guy on first then instead of third?
He ended up taking second because of indifference on the next play.
Okay.
So it really didn't end up costing him. The other thing in that everybody in the section did enjoy of my loudness was I tried to stop the wave.
Yeah, which I don't understand. I know we're going to get into it later. At least it looks like we are, according to the show sheet anyway. Who knows what we're going to do with this show, the way we go off on tangents. But I kind of
like that one.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't get it. Lydia Cruz, who hosts the Blitz in the morning, I saw she tweeted something about how she doesn't like it at all. And I really don't care what Lydia thinks, and I don't really care what you think about the wave either. The wave started here at the University of Washington with Rob Weller way back when. And if kids want to do it and kids are into it and people are having a good time doing the wave, Who are you and Lydia to sit there and go, hey, stop the wave, stop having fun? What's it mean that we're not a true baseball town if we're doing the wave because we're not intelligent baseball fans? Is that what that means?
Well, that's not why I don't like the wave.
Oh, okay.
It has nothing to do with that. Right. I just don't like the wave. And I think Husky Stadium is like one of eight places to claim they're the origin of the wave.
No, Rob Weller was the man.
And I don't know if we should be bragging about inventing that. Like, it's
no, that
not,
was cool when it first started.
It's not like electricity.
No,
like,
when it first started, it was
really
cool.
We invented the wave. Like, there's a lot better stuff that's come out of the University of Washington than that. But, yeah, I'm just one man trying to stand against a social movement of the wave at baseball games. I don't like it. So I stood up and tried to brace myself and hold it against the wave, and then it came crashing over. I was sucked over the falls in surfer
speed. Caught in the undertow?
Yeah, and then it came around again. And that time I tried more of a Judge Smales, like waving my arms. Heave off! Heave off! And then it came washing through. At that point, Stanton stood up and turned around and looked at me and saw that I was trying to yell against the wave.
Oh.
John Stanton,
the
who
owner.
Owns the team.
Yes.
He also, I went down and talked to him, and he was telling his wife about how Jim Moore had taken his wallet.
Yeah.
Right. I did take his wallet.
Well, he didn't just take his wallet. He started rifling through it.
He did.
You know, he had more money in his wallet than I have in mine.
Yeah. That's
shocker.
A great thing for everyone in Seattle who's interested in the Mariners acquiring more talent.
Well, maybe you should start your own sort of movement of the Wave Busters.
The Wave Busters?
Because I had a buddy, him and his brother, that used to like fold their arms really tight whenever the wave came along. They were the Wave Busters.
I kind of like that idea.
You going to start it?
Yes, absolutely. It's Danny David Moore. We got Jerry DePoto coming up at 3:30. What do we expect from the Mariners? How do they take this series against the Angels? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny David Moore,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
From the 206, our Coors Light text line. Oh, that was you trying to stop the wave. I was wondering who the weirdo was trying to stop it. Full disclosure, I don't like it either. So I asked him, was it funny or annoying? We'll use your answer on. Answer was funny. Mostly because I don't like it and because it was motioning just like someone who would normally be trying to get people to start the wave.
I've seen it happen at do they do it at CenturyLink? I don't even notice.
I have not seen it at CenturyLink before, and I haven't seen it in quite a while at Husky Stadium.
Yeah, well, I've seen it over at Safeco. I just don't pay attention to it. I mean, it's happening. It doesn't affect me. I don't get mad or I'm not happy. It's just there.
You don't stand up when it's your turn to stand up?
No, I don't. I don't participate.
Do you fold your arms over your chest like a Grumpalumpus?
The Wave Buster?
The Wave Buster.
I like yours, like holding it back with both hands.
I was like, no!
Kids are just having fun, people that are into it, so why not?
No, I would say this. The energy that's there at the park, and July 4th isn't the greatest sort of day because you're generally going to have a pretty good crowd there. For that, it's the holiday and people are dressed up. But I think the last three or four times that I've been to games there, I thought that the energy's really good at the park right now. I think people are excited about this team.
Well, and yesterday we were talking about, you know, it used to be, boy, the same old Mariners. A game like yesterday's, you'd go, you'd be thinking, okay, first and second, nobody out, bases loaded, nobody out. And then you hear or you're watching, you're going, oh, they don't score. Well, same old Mariners. Well, yesterday in these situations, you were actually, or at least I was, surprised that they didn't come through. Now, they were 2-for-12 runners in scoring position, but it was more surprised that they didn't come through rather than, same old Mariners, because things have changed.
They gave themselves an opportunity to win that game. On a game where Leak wasn't great and really couldn't put hitters away, and I thought that that was the story for him, that he let guys, and it started in the first inning with Trout, like guys just sat on and fouled off pitch after pitch after pitch. And look, that's going to be one of the things you have on this team of not a lot of hard throwers aside from Paxton in your starting rotation. They're not going to strike out a lot of opposing hitters. Gonzalez has been better in that this year. And then they had scoring opportunities late. And I'll say you line up and take it. It was a bummer. Bases loaded, no out, and they got no runs because Denard Span and then D. Gordon struck out. It's going to happen sometimes.
They got unlucky, too, because the rookie out there at second base made a nice play.
Really
on
nice grab on Segura's line drive. But you look at what they've done. They put themselves and had a chance to do it. And as long as this team gives themselves chances, and especially gives themselves chances late, I like the way they play and the way they hang in there.
Yeah, and I expect them to win tonight. But this is still a really good team. I mean, if you get guys like Cole Calhoun and Valbuena coming around for them, you know, Trout, Pools, you know, Andrelton Simmons, really good player. How about Shohei Ohtani? Saw him get a couple of hits last night, yesterday, and That guy is really an impressive. I guess I'd never really looked at him that closely. He's 6'4". How do you look in person?
He's impressive. We sat and watched him pitch that game, which was the last time he'd played at Safeco Field.
Yeah, that's right. He did pitch, yeah.
Which we saw him there. And then watching him hit yesterday, and he's not pitching right now. At the risk of being too much like Brock Heward and obsessing over a guy's body, he's got this power bubble butt that's there. He's not super skinny. He's 6'4", and he's lean, but he's got a little butt. Like, he's got a little power source that's there. He's got power the opposite way. To me, that's the most impressive thing about him as a hitter, is that he's actually got some pop when he goes the other way. He hits to all fields. I like watching him play.
Well, I do too, and I don't know if he's going to come back as a pitcher at any time soon. He's a good hitter, but he's supposed to be a better pitcher, and so it's – and the Angels are so many games back right now. I guess in a way I'm happy that he's not pitching, and I'm also happy that he's not just tearing the cover off the ball and throwing shutouts every time he's out there. Because that was a guy, at the beginning of the season, I just thought, oh, man, okay, the Mariners got unlucky not getting Shohei Ohtani. And so now that he's with the Angels, I figured that would be the piece that would put them over the top, and it hasn't worked out that way just yet.
Danny's anti-wave rhetoric and tactics put him dangerously close to Codger status.
Oh, that's right. We have our...
As long as I'm not
what
a
What are you, 42?
43.
43. You can't be a Codger at 43, no matter what you're saying.
Anti-wave...
Can you be a get-off-your-lawn guy at 43?
I think so.
Can you? I think you have to be at least 50.
Well, let me ask you this. How old's Tom Wassel?
Tom Wassel's 37 or 38.
Yeah, he's younger than me, and he is definitely a Codger.
You can be an old soul then.
No, he's a Codger. Yeah. He's grumpy about
things. He's actually a borderline old coot.
There's a little bit. He's got some coot tendencies. There's no doubt about that. We've got Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager. He makes his weekly visit with us. That's coming up next.
This is Danny, Dave, and more.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Mariners' 8-game winning streak snapped yesterday against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And they got Garrett Richards back. He pitched pretty well, gave up a couple solo home runs, a back-and-forth game, and the Mariners end up falling the rubber match. The rubber game of the series is tonight with Marco Gonzalez on the mound. They've minimized the damage from Mike Trout, and the Seattle Mariners have generated a huge amount of momentum. We're going to be talking to Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager, here in just a second. But talked about the momentum that was there, and we got a couple really fun sort of text messages that have come in about different people who've come up from games. Saying one family that came up from Oregon, last time we were at a Mariners game 19 years ago when my oldest was an infant, glad for the fun this year. There is, when you're there, you can feel a different kind of excitement and energy that we've seen. The last time I really remember it being this kind of momentum was 2007. They got on a pretty good win streak late in the year. Mike Hargrove was the manager then. But this is there is a different expectation and excitement that's around this team.
Do you get the sense, because I do, that the people who are waiting to see if they're going to be good or they're going to tank have finally climbed on board? Because I do think that Mariner fans don't want to get their feelings hurt. They don't want to get their hopes up and get them dashed by, you know, what usually happens. And last year it was injuries. You know, how many different starting pitchers did they have? 40 or something like that?
I think it was more than 40 total pitchers, and I think their starting pitchers was up near 20.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you keep waiting for. You keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it hasn't happened this year. And, you know, you expect to win every game, and even that was, you know, they were somewhat in that game yesterday, lost 7-4, but there's not been really, except for early in the season, terrible blowouts. You know, there was a couple, and I listened to Jerry DePoto talk on the podcast Wheelhouse about how they really expected to go in there, and really they shot themselves in the foot on that trip that went east with Boston and New York. There's two games there that they really, because what'd they do? They went 1-5.
1-5 in the games against the Yankees. Yeah, and they lost 2 5-run leads. Five-run lead up 5-0 against the Yankees, and they were up 10-5 in the game between what turned out to be the slugfest.
Right. So, you know, that's something that they just expected to win. And we'll have to ask Jerry when we get him on. He said something about how these other teams are, if there's 25 guys, they're all taking their own taxi cab, and he said for this team, they're all piling into the same one. This team is all together.
Is it like a clown car?
Yeah,
I know. Like all of a sudden they pull up to the restaurant.
Like where does Cruz sit? Because he takes up like enough for two men.
Dude, there's a story on ESPN.com. I saw it just before we went on about the naps Nelson Cruz takes.
I heard about that. Yeah, and that he's like, okay, I'm done now. And he puts on like
my little flight mask.
Put a blindfold on?
Yeah. It's not a blindfold.
I don't think
it's
they call
an
it a blindfold.
Mask.
That's usually what somebody's about to get shot.
Well, it's and the then, same thing.
Yes, they give him a blindfold and a cigarette, Jim.
Oh, so he just lays there in the middle of the clubhouse, right, for a half an hour?
Well, it depends on the stadium because it talks about some of the better places to nap.
Some places, don't they have a room?
Yes. In Seattle, they have a room. Baltimore is one of the better places for napping. They've got some good couches. And Nelson, if they don't have blankets, he'll use towels. Which I've used a towel before to sleep. It's actually more effective than you might think.
I could never sleep before a game. I know guys used to do that. And some people can just fall asleep. We had a trainer, Jim Weitzel, who was the trainer at – and he's not doing well right now. So I just want to, you know, mention prayers and thoughts for Jim Weitzel. But he was one of those guys, like, in between double-day practices, He would literally take a newspaper and put it over his head like you see people sleeping on a park bench, and he would be out in like 20 seconds. Just so I can't do that.
My father-in-law is in town right now, and he's one of the world's greatest nappers. Like, he really can. It's inspiring. Like, I want to be able to shut off like that when I sit down and there's just like half hour I don't have anything to do and just conk out. I absolutely.
You have too many voices in your head, Danny.
It's possible. I'm a little too hyper or a little too, I don't know what it is. I got too many voices.
So what do you do when you're tossing and turning? Like what I do is I picture myself at Cannon Beach walking down and going out to Haystack Rock and seeing the waves. Do you have anything like that? Do you count sheep? Do you do anything?
I try to think about nothing.
You try and think about nothing?
Yeah. I try to think about, they don't have them anymore. A drive-in movie theater, and I think about the screen during the day before the movie starts. Like, big, white, open field, and I try to just keep going back and picturing the drive-in because it was one of the things my mom told me.
They still have drive-ins.
Do they?
Yeah, there's one over in Bremerton, I think, unless they've closed it down.
Well,
I snuck into one once in the back of my parents' 63 Cadillac, and two girls and myself, we were in the trunk. You ever been in the trunk of a car?
Yes.
It's unsettling.
Yes, it is.
It's claustrophobic,
and
you can't see your hand in front of your face, but it was an X-rated movie that was playing over it. It was the Belkirk Drive-In. It's over there, like, the Burgermaster area there.
Okay, wait. This is your parents' car, not...
My parents' car. Okay, no, my sister was driving, and I think I was 15 or 16 at the time, and yeah, I thought it was a pretty cool idea to get in there, but you can't wait to get out of the trunk of a car once you're in there.
Well, at the risk of derailing a story about going to see an X-rated movie at a drive-in, we've now got the Jerry DePoto Show.
This is the Jerry DePoto Show.
Presented by Ram Trucks.
And Geico. Every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and more.
Looking forward to it every week.
The latest transactions. The breakdown on the Mariners' latest moves. The reason behind the decisions that shape the organization.
I love the time together. It gives me a chance to hold myself accountable.
Now, here's Danny, Dave, and more.
We have the Mariners GM, in this case a life preserver, saving us from ourselves. Jerry, how are you doing?
I have to say, having just spent a minute-ish on hold, waiting for that story to wrap up, I how I'm doing is fascinated. Fascinated with stories of a man, two women, trunks, X-rated movies. You never know what you're going to hear on 710.
Yeah, the movie was everything you wanted to know about sex, but were afraid to ask.
Oh, it's a Woody Allen movie,
oh,
right?
That's Woody Allen.
Okay, that's not as dirty as it sounded. Let's get to the baseball here. Jerry, really fun to watch your team playing. You guys keep rolling. Eight-game winning streak snapped yesterday. Man, this has got to be fun for you to watch how this thing has come together.
I think it's fun for all of us, and you know, a bit of a clunker yesterday, but for the most part, we have been terrific, fun to watch over these first 3 months of the season, now actually three-plus months of the season. The energy has been great. I think the obvious, which is coming through a couple of sweeps in Baltimore and Kansas City and taking care of our business, game one of this Angels series, and we were due for a bit of a deflation, and hopefully we can get back on the horse tonight with Marco on the mound. But from the starting pitching to the bullpen to the every someone new every day chipping in on the offensive side to win games. We're getting it done, and it's been a lot of fun.
Jerry, we've talked a lot about Marco Gonzalez and kind of the emergence that he's had this year, and even mentioned kind of how you guys have found value in starting pitching with a guy that maybe doesn't have the velocity that teams would ideally like in a starter, but has athleticism, competitiveness. From your perspective, it seems like he's become a more effective strikeout pitcher. He's gotten more strikeouts this year. What do you attribute that to?
Well, it's actually, and I've said this before about Marco, Marco's always been good, and at the minor league levels, Marco's always generated a pretty healthy strikeout rate. But that's mostly consistent with what he's doing now for us at the major league level. So the way I equate it is that Marco has he's adjusted to being a major leaguer. He's obviously refined his pitch qualities, particularly the way he uses his fastball and the way he sequences his curveball, cutter, and change. I think it's the development of the cutter, but I don't think it's a shocking strikeout rate because that's roughly what he's always done in the minors. And while sometimes you would consider a player likely to take a step back with the jump from minor league baseball to major league baseball, Marco's not a guy that does it based on velocity. So it's that feel of the pitch and to sequence, it's very believable to me. And I think he's been terrific for us all year, and I suspect it will continue.
Well, it's sure been fun to watch, Jerry. And I'm just wondering, he's at 100 innings now starting for you tonight. What's the plan for him in the second half of the season? Because when you talk about adding depth to that rotation, I imagine it's with Marco in mind.
Yeah, it's Marco in mind. It's Gene Paxton. It's Wade LeBlanc. It's having a variety of guys who have never really or consistently run up those kind of innings totals. Now, we don't want to place a manufactured or an artificial number on them. We want to let them and their bodies and their performance tell us, you know, at what point they're starting to tire out and need a little help. And now doesn't seem that time, but we want to be open to it. And we have no fixed number, particularly with these pitchers, with innings pitched. But we do believe that there's that 150, 160 inning range where we do have to get our antenna up and make sure that we're giving them the help they need. They might need us, you know, that extra day, bump them to the sixth day when possible, or even for a period of time run six starters just to make sure that we get through the long season and prepare ourselves for what we hope is a run into the postseason.
Hey, Jerry, having listened to the Wheelhouse podcast, I want to fold in some goofy questions. And my first one was, I heard that there was some badminton played in the DePoto backyard over the 4th of July. My question for you is, did you get sore?
Did I get sore playing badminton?
Yes.
No, but it was more about my competition than the...
Was it your son?
They weren't forcing me to run around a lot.
Yeah. All right, well, I played badminton.
It was my kid.
Yeah, you were playing against your kid. I played against my nephew, and it got really competitive, and I was drenched in sweat, and next thing you know, I was sore the next day. So you're in better shape than I am. Hey, I want to ask you about what you said about Scott Servais, because you said, you know, tactically and as far as from the standpoint of managing personalities, that Scott Servais is, you think, at the absolute top of his game right now.
I really couldn't be happier with where Scott is and how much he has evolved as a major league manager over these 3 years. And I really don't think there's any more he could have done for the 2018 Mariners than what he has. We've dealt with adversity. He's had to be tactically precise all season long because of the nature of our run differential. It is what it is. Having a manager call the right shots, make the pitching changes at the right time, and push the right buttons in a lot of close games is kind of how you make your money. And I think Scott has done a wonderful job of it. And I've always thought that his ability in the clubhouse, managing people and personalities and developing culture has been a great strength of his. And I think he deserves a lot of credit, if not the lion's share of the credit, for so much of the good things that have happened to this club and really what we've done as a franchise over these last couple of years.
Yeah, and, you know, we had a topic last week, Jerry, where it was like, okay, who's most responsible for where the Mariners are right now? And, The good news was that there was a lot of different. It's a huge, wide range. It was you. It was Scott Servais. It was Edwin Diaz. It was Gene Segura, and it was Dee Gordon. So, good place to be in where you're trying to. You know, usually it's pretty clear there's one superstar. Nelson Cruz was in there, but it's nice that and I just wanted to tell you it was evenly distributed amongst probably six different people.
And that's the nature of what we're about. That's our culture. It's all in it together type of deal. And everybody pitches in, does their part. We have no huge egos to try to balance. And that's been such a refreshing development, especially what we've seen this year, is a team gelling. And, you know, it takes some touch to manage that. And I think Scotty's done a wonderful job with it. But to win a season, to win and get to the postseason, to win at a 63% clip the way we have this to this point, requires a village, and it requires a 25-man roster that all clicks together. And right now I think you're seeing that. I'm glad people have identified that as well.
Jerry, we got the news today that Ariel Miranda has been released and he's going to pitch in Japan. And I'm just wondering if you could give us some background on that, because it to me, and maybe it's a misperception and I misperceive things all the time, but Miranda looked like he pitched well against the Astros, the one spot start that he had in April, and then he ended up in Tacoma, and it sounds like he had a blister-type problem. I'm not sure what was going on there, whether he fell out of favor or what, but I didn't really hear much about him in the last month or two, and now he's off to Japan.
No, Ariel, some of it is doing the right thing for the human being. Right now, Ariel had fallen down our depth chart, so to speak, and did a very good job last year of taking the ball every fifth day in a season where we were battling a ton of injury. And he did yeoman work and effectively leading our team in innings. And it wasn't a grossly different skill set than what Ariel had always shown before, which was, you know, an average-ish to tick above fastball velocity and two different forms of changeup. And he went out there and hit battle every night, and a really good athlete, and loved the makeup. He's a really good guy. But Ariel's he's married. He's got a young family. Obviously came here from Cuba, and in his world, he would certainly like to make more money than you generally make playing in AAA. And we could not really promise him that there was a major league job for him on the near horizon. And we came to an agreement with a team in Japan to sell his contract or the rights to his contract. He agreed on a contract with the Japanese club, and he'll go over and join them. He will make considerably more money than he would have made here. We will get a financial benefit for allowing that to happen, and hopefully repurpose it in a productive way for our roster. And most importantly, give Ariel and his family. No, Miranda's not a young guy. He's coming up on 30 years old. By the standards of baseball, you are starting to move the needle. It's not a prospect we're waiting to hit. This is an opportunity for him to do the right thing for his family and put a little bit of money in the bank. And maybe 2-3 years down the road, he comes back and he'll be the next Wade LeBlanc.
This is something that thankfully you guys haven't had to really, really experiment or worry about much this year, which is depth of starting pitching. You've had, knock on wood, and I'm rapping furiously in my knuckles on my noggin. You've had guys stay healthy. Where is your depth at starting pitching at right now with the departure of Miranda?
You know, we've got our five. We've got Paxton. We've got Leek. We've got Felix. We've got Marco and Wade LeBlanc, five in the big leagues. Our long man swing man right now is Roannis Elias, who's done a terrific job since we picked him up from the Red Sox and called him to the big leagues. And then at AAA Tacoma, we've got Christian Bergman. On the one day we called him to the big leagues through seven shutout innings versus Texas. We've got Rob Whalen, who had a heck of a day getting us over the hump in a relief outing. I believe it was against Detroit here earlier in the year. And we feel pretty comfortable with that group that we have at Tacoma and even a couple of the guys we have throwing right now in Arkansas. And we're seeing a resurgent Max Posey since we fixed a few mechanical flaws. And there are a number of guys that we would feel comfortable calling on for a major league start as depth pieces. And we are getting into that portion of the season where we do expect or hope to add some depth via trade, whether it's adding to our major league club in the rotation or the bullpen with multi-inning arms or a starter.
We're talking to Jerry DePoto here, his weekly visit with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. And Jerry, I stumbled across a story on ESPN.com about Nelson Cruz's naps and that he's pretty adamant about his sleep. It got me to thinking, because I know that one of the additions in the offseason was Lorena Martin, who's in charge of the director of high performance. And I'm not asking questions about any proprietary stuff that you guys have instituted, but have you seen some changes in maybe the habits and ways that players prepare in over the past couple of years, and even specifically since Lorena was added?
I do think there's a few players that have been positively affected or changed maybe some of their habits, and not necessarily because they had bad habits, because now they just know a little more. And we do have some players, most notably, that have taken advantage. We have a sleep room in our clubhouse that we built prior to the 2017 season to give our guys a chance to recharge the battery, so to speak. There's enough background and medical information that suggests something as simple as a 20-minute nap is just going to recharge the athlete before they go out to compete. And guys are taking advantage of it. And I think some of the guys that have really benefited, Gene Segura is one of them. And it's something I don't think he was doing enough of before or any of. And he's doing it now. And I think he's seen positive results. And Nelson, that's not really a new development for Nelly. Nelly, he likes his sleep and he gets a lot of it. He's probably as conscious of what his body needs in terms of needing to recharge as any player I've ever been around. And my thought is that Nelson's hours of sleep probably run in conjunction with his percentage of body muscle. He needs a little more than the rest of us.
I like that. Do you ever duck into the nap room, Jerry?
I walk past the nap room and I look at it longingly, thinking some other time. I will get my 20 minutes home and then get to work and do my thing. But I'm not required to run around and throw pitches, run bases, and hit homers. So I talk on telephones.
Hey, Jerry, tell us about, I was also listening to the podcast about some of your prospects and some of the guys that you find. It's so fascinating to me. Like the scouts in the NFL, I used to call them spies because, you know, they would show up at camp and they would come up to you and start talking to you and tell you everything about your life. And you look at them like, who in the hell are you? And, you know, you have these guys just that are scouring the world, basically, for players. And you found this kid. I'm going to screw up his first name. It's Marte Nuovi. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, Nuovi Marte.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about him. He sounds really excited. He's like a young kid, right? 15, 16 years old?
Yeah, 16 years old. He's the newest member of the Mariners. We just signed an international class that was about, I think, 9 players we expect to sign or have signed by the end of this first week in the international signing period. And Nuovi was for the most part, the headliner. One of what we think is the best 6 or 8 international prospects in this year's market. And I think that is consistent with the industry's opinion of Nuovi. Generally comes out on third-party lists as one of the top 10 prospects internationally. 5-tool kid. He's a shortstop. Really good athlete. He does roughly everything on a field that you would like to see a kid his age do. He has advanced field of hit and advanced power for a 16-year-old, and he's hit with a wood bat. We've had him in various different tryout situations or camps down in the Dominican Republic, and we were thrilled to get him. Think it's a pretty good outcome for us. And, you know, he's going to start out his career at shortstop, but we feel like there's enough bat there to potentially play up on a corner should his body grow him off of the shortstop, because he's going to be a big man. And we really like that combination of skill. Even coming out of the draft, we also signed a left-hand pitcher out of Taiwan by the name of Tang, who's 17 years old, going to be 18 by the time he truly gets his pro career underway. He is back in Taiwan right now waiting to graduate high school. And once that occurs, report to Arizona and join our team down in Peoria. But again, a 17-year-old kid can really spin a curveball, get the fastball up to 93 miles an hour, and has been the top pitcher for the international team or the national team here for the last 2 years, so since he was 16 years old. And a terrifically talented young kid, and add that together with last year's international class, which was highlighted by Julio Rodriguez, an outfielder who is right now tearing it up for us in the Dominican Summer League, and what we think was a pretty good 2018 draft class headed by Logan Gilbert and Josh Towers, who we feel like have a chance to be, you know, in reverse order, an everyday center fielder and a top half of the rotation type starting pitcher. It's been a good month to add talent to the Mariners system.
Jerry, I've only got time for one more question. I'm going to give you a choice here. Would you like a question about Mike Zunino taking his second day off in a row today, or one about Bark in the Park?
Geez, let me think. Bark in the Park.
Attaboy. Attaboy, Jerry. I love you for that. Okay, so Bark in the Park, you're going to have it again tonight. I'm bringing my dog, River. What do you think about the whole idea? You've got four barks in the park there. You like the idea of having a bunch of hounds there at the park?
I love it because my wife brings my dogs to the ballpark, which is a, you know, doggy go to work day. It's fun. It gives people something to look forward to, and you know, being I'm a dog lover, and it's unique, and we're not the only ballpark in the league that does it now, and there are a handful of places throughout the league. It's unique. I think it invites a fan who might not otherwise, you know, be inclined to come to the game because they do stay at home with their pets. It's cool, and if it gives my wife a chance to slap the Mariners jersey with the little number one on the back of my Bulldogs, I think it's well worth the price of a ticket.
You also, if I'm remembering correctly, didn't you have to perform a pool rescue of one of the Bulldogs?
I did, and unfortunately, he passed away.
Oh no!
But he lived a long life. He was a 9 to 12 month lifespan, and he lived to be 15. So. His deal with the devil came to an end, but he was an awesome dog, and I will never forget having to dive to the bottom of the pool because he was sinking, but he made it through a couple more years after that.
Well, that's great. Jerry, we always love talking to you. It's been a lot of fun. I was at the game yesterday, and I know we've all been getting out there. Jim's going to Bark in the Park tonight.
Wait, did you hear Danny at the park, by the way, Jerry, because he was screaming his lungs out?
I missed them, but it's only because it's awesome to see Safeco Field filled right now, and it's been an electric environment. And if one voice gets lost in there seems to be another 30 or 35,000 to cover it up.
Yeah, and the other thing
is a really obnoxious voice.
Yeah, missed is not the right verb for that. Like nobody misses me when they don't hear me. Thank you so much, Jerry.
All right, guys. I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jerry.
That is Jerry DePoto, his weekly appearance with us, which is always a blast, brought to you by Ram Trucks and by GEICO. We got the professor. We'll get you caught up in the NFL next.